Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today's show, we are going to stretch the boundaries a little bit. We're going to talk about something very tangent to a cybersecurity concept, and that is of social engineering. And our guest today, Jeff Tippett, is a persuasive communications expert. He's a published author, has a second book coming out in January. I'll let him talk about the book and what it's about, but he's worked with a lot of major brands in advertising, but kind of in this art of how to make people say yes, and then how to understand how that works is what we have to do in social engineering. Welcome today, Jeff. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for the opportunity to hang out with you and chat just a little bit about persuasive communications.
Yes, and I am actually very excited because we try to keep less conversation before because we went candid during the show. I want to understand and hear what you're going to say. But first of all, give us your story. We want to know how you got to where you're at. I know there's some of your story in the book from what you told me, but give us your background, your story.
Sure. I've worked in the marketing, PR, advertising world for most of my life. My graduate degree is in English, so I come from a communications background. And then preparing to figure out exactly where my specialty is and where my area is, honing in on my background and who I am and what I love to do and what I'm passionate about, I zeroed in on the space of persuasive communications. I lived this out with major brands through my firm. I also speak on it from stage. In October 2014, I launched the company Targeted Persuasion, which was to be a political consulting firm, and I launched at the worst time possible for political consultancy, during an even number year, a month before the election. However, I signed a half dozen clients my first week, and then within the first quarter, I signed my first international client, which is this little small company out of California called Airbnb, to help them with their public affairs, persuading elected officials and the general public, to help them here in the state of North Carolina.
North Carolina, so that's where you hail from right now?
I live in the capital city of Raleigh, have offices in the beautiful downtown Raleigh area.
Yeah, so a lot of you out there might say, okay, wait, advertising, marketing, what's this have to do with cybersecurity? But as we kind of alluded to in the opening, there's a part of cybersecurity that's human, and that is the part where people, or whether it's online or in person, get people to commit to something, get people to click on something, get people to enable something, get people to send money by what is known as social engineering. And that's the art of how do you make somebody in a digital sense or even physical. Sometimes these are phone calls of social engineering or people in person finding out information or going through garbage. Oh, my God. But that, how do you make people commit to something so that then you can take advantage of them in some way, which is all about persuasive communications. So Jeff, tell us about, the book that you wrote and published and maybe even prelude the second one. But, there's always a story behind somebody's book and it's always very personal. So tell me about yours.
Yeah, my book, the second one, comes out in January of 2019, and I'm really excited about this book because it gives me an opportunity to tell the story of adopting a baby from the country of Haiti during a time of civil unrest and a collapsing bureaucracy. And in this, I'm able to walk through and discuss the emotions, discuss what I walked through during this time, but you know, also to discuss a very pivotal moment for my life and my career and for this important adoption, as I, for the first time in my life, began to understand what manipulation is and what persuasion is and how different the two of them are, and also faced the internal struggle of myself of how I most often performed. And unfortunately, I have to say that it was more times I was relying on manipulation to move people versus persuasion. But there in Haiti, with everything collapsing around me and all these cultural differences, manipulation didn't work for me. And I had to figure out, how do I persuade?
Interesting. So let's take a break real quick. We'll come back after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. And we're talking to Jeff Tippett today about persuasive communications. And we kind of heard that he has a background in advertising, helped advertise some small companies like Airbnb, right? I liked how you put that, because it definitely we got the message across with that one. But persuasive versus manipulation was the last thing we talked about before the break. And really on both sides of that, we have a skill set in the cyber world. Manipulation is how, you know, we social engineer people say yes. Persuasion, we really need, because we need to know how to influence our organizations and our uplines, our business, to help us get the cybersecurity job done, because the small amount of cybersecurity professionals in the organization can't be doing all the work, and we can't get funding unless they understand what we're doing. So that part of persuasion. So both sides of this is really a total interest here on my part. So I'll just turn it back over to you, Jeff. Which one do we want to start with and talk about maybe even the difference and the dichotomy between these two?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the beauties, and hearing you talk, like looking back at the book and thinking through the content here, you're right in that it does work. It does work like when we're converting online or making things happen that way, but it also applies to our one-on-one conversations or our conversations with multiple people. But yeah, let's pick up a little bit, if it's okay, to talk about manipulation versus persuasion and maybe tell you a little bit about my aha moment of understanding the difference. As I mentioned, I adopted a baby from the country of Haiti. It wasn't something I had planned to do or wanted to do, but my father went over. He told me the story of this ninth grader who had a baby and was in an English-speaking Christian school and was forced a decision to give up your baby or drop out of school. And I can't even imagine what that was like for her to make that gut-wrenching decision. But that began my journey. What I didn't know was that Haiti was falling apart. The president, Aristide, was being run out of office. There were violence. There were what they called manifestations. There were all of these events going on around the country that I had no idea that I walked into. And so one of the aha moments for me came at a point when my Haitian attorney emailed me and said, Jeff, the person that you need to sign this next level of documentation here in the Haitian government is not showing up for work. In fact, no one's showing up for work. So, Jeff, you know, at best here, you need to consider that your adoption is on hold, but at worst, your adoption might be over. This thing could be totally ended. Well, not only was I deflated, like, I was depressed at that point. So I got up, went to bed, got the next morning, decided I was going to fly to Haiti. And here's what I did. This was my plan of attack here to make things happen. I went up to Haiti, and I decided, I stayed with my attorney in his house. Every day, I got up and I walked with my interpreter to this particular governmental office that I needed a signature. And every day I sat there all day long, just hoping someone would show up, only to walk home disappointed that no one showed up. about 2 weeks into this, finally someone happened to pop into the office. You can probably imagine where my head is at this point. Like, I have very few people to speak English, to have conversations with. I have all these emotions going, all this stuff was happening. And I basically pounced on this person when he came into the office and told him the story. But here's what I found. I was using words like I, me, and my constantly. I was saying things like my adoption and how I need to complete this, how I need you to sign this. And this guy just glassed over. And he wouldn't respond. So I had to turn this thing quickly. And looking at, you know, what I knew, the limited knowledge I had of Haitian culture, I knew that Haitians loved their children. They viewed them as jewels. They were precious to them. So I turned my conversation around, and I made it about you. And I said, I know how important children are to you. Let me tell you the story of this little girl. I told her about how she didn't have a home, how she was now in an orphanage, how she didn't have food, she didn't have love, she didn't have a family, she didn't have a promise of an education. And I looked at him and I said, if you will sign this document, I'll be the one to provide that. And instantaneously, he turned, and within 10 minutes, I had the document signed. But here's what I learned about myself. Here was my aha moment in this conversation. I was used to twisting arms, making things happen. Even if it damaged the relationship, it wasn't a priority. And what I cared about was making things happen. And what I learned was that my general mode here was to manipulate.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the focus on what I need, what I'm getting out of that, is the manipulation side. Is that kind of the connection I just made?
Perfect. You set this up exactly. So let's talk about the two. Manipulation means this. Manipulation means to control or to influence a person or a situation, to do it cleverly, to do it unfairly. Now, like persuasion, it is about moving people and getting a person to make a decision. But what happens in manipulation is we do this based on our own good. What we want out of this contract, what we want out of the deal, focus on ourselves and how this benefits us. Uh-huh. Now, think about the downsides of all that, how negative that is. And especially if you're in sales or if you're, you know, trying to continue to move people forward, they may fall for things one time, but they're not going to fall multiple times. So let's talk about persuasion. Persuasion means this. It means to call someone to do something through reasoning or argument. And the word argument here isn't like what we do at Thanksgiving over our tables as we talk about politics and religion. Argument here really means for both sides to say what's important to them, what they're looking for, what's the value to them, where the gaps are, where the needs are, and then over time, right, most likely with sustained effort and having provided sound reasoning, that your audience, the other person, comes to the same place that you are, and they accept your knowledge and your positioning here for their own. And I look for two magical words to know if I have persuaded or if I've manipulated. And if I hear these two words, I know that I persuaded. And those two words are, that's right. And typically it comes out in that way or some other form. So here's what I mean by that. When I'm trying to close a contract, trying to close a deal, and I hear back from the person, hey, Jeff, you know, your firm, you guys are the right people. You can solve this problem that we have. Or, Jeff, you're the right person to come on stage. I feel like you can really move our audience and help them understand and go to the next level in life. At that point, they are just as excited as I am for it. Like, they want it just as much as I want it. They see the good for themselves. And at that point, I have persuaded them toward my position and not manipulated.
Okay, so I heard one other thing in there that I want to understand. On the persuasion side, you said, and you used the example of like Thanksgiving dinner, okay? You said that both parties get across their needs and both of them agree on it. How much is it that both of them have to agree or the other person has to agree that this is valid?
So I think in persuasion, what I look for is I want a person, like whatever perspective, and to me, persuasion is about leadership. It's understanding a better future. It's understanding a better path, a better way to do things, and then bringing people along in that journey with you. So to me, the persuasion side of things is really the only way to operate, because what I'm after here is I don't want the person to do it because I have forced them or I have twisted their arm. I really want them to understand this for themselves. I want them to see the benefit for themselves, why it's important to them, why it matters to them, why it's the best thing for them. Because if I can get them to that point, they are just as fired up, they are just as excited, and you know, they're not angry with me, they're not upset with me, they don't feel like I've made things happen. They want this just as much as I do.
Interesting. So I have one follow-on to that, but let's go take a break. We'll hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back to talk to Jeff Tibbett more about persuasive communications. Be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. Talking to Jeff Tibbett about persuasive communications here at New Cyber Frontier, broadcasting from the Secure Set Academy in Colorado Springs. Jeff, you know, one thing, we have been talking before the break about persuasion and getting the other person to understand the value in it for them. Does it, and my follow-on question to that is, does it matter if they understand what value is in it for me, or do I just flatter them away until they think it's all for them? What's the balance there?
Yeah, for me, and from my perspective, what I like to do is talk through, communicate, and that's one of the things that I talk about in the book as well, is like really focusing in on the other person. I have a whole chapter where I talk about helping others find their win, mm-hmm. and we drill down into this to understand what it is that they're after. I think the most solid approach to this is when, yes, it's what I want, but yes, we found it's for the other person as well. And sometimes the person, you'll find out in this stage that it's just not. It's not going to be a good match. You're not going to be able to move forward. And that's fine to be in that place as well. But coming to the point where they're there. Like, they want it. They own your message for themselves. And they're out as your evangelist telling your story for you.
Okay, and I totally see that. Now, making that balance, and then I'm going to connect it back to social engineering. On the other side, manipulation. In most cases, well, let's start out in manipulation. Give us some stories about manipulation and just either, you know, how that doesn't work or how it might have worked, but cause problems later. Just curious about, you know, why that other category is kind of in the bad section.
Yeah, great question. So from my perspective, we can't say that manipulation doesn't work. Manipulation definitely does work, but it's at a much lower level of how we influence people. It's not the elevated level of persuasion. And does manipulation work? Again, absolutely it works. But here's the thing about it. If you have a sustained approach with a person where there might be multiple steps or multiple ways you're taking them on a journey of where you want to be, manipulation often just works one time. And after a person has that feel of manipulation, it's really hard for them then to trust you out to be looking for their own good. You ask for ways it does work. My firm does communications work. We do a lot of political work. Unfortunately, in the political space, a lot of the work is around manipulation. It's the lowest level. It's the easiest. It's the fastest way to move people forward is to manipulate them. I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think long-term it works, but it can work in the short term. But it often jeopardizes the relationship.
So now I think I just put it all together, or at least that piece. That's the trust. I mean, you can manipulate somebody into walking onto a car dealer and walking out of there with a car and get them to convince that it's the greatest thing and they bought it. But then they get the, what's it called, buyer's regret later, right?
Yes.
And that's the part that persuasion doesn't have.
Exactly. So let's pick up with exactly your illustration here, because you're right on. Here's the thing. So take someone who is in car sales, for example. We know that car sales, any company, basically, if you look at one of the most expensive areas for any company, is customer acquisition. We do so much. We spend so much money in marketing, in advertising, in public relations work to get someone in to buy. We know that that's extremely expensive. If I buy a car from you and I walk out, and I feel like you have manipulated me instead of helped to persuade me, I am going to feel resentment. I am not coming back to you when I need my second car. When a friend says, hey, I need a new car, I'm not going to recommend you. So that's why I say, yeah, it can work. It's not sustainable, and it's not the best approach.
Yeah, and if we pull that over to social engineering, and we'll even talk about, like, cyber phishing, The objective is to get somebody to click once. They don't care about the trust relationship, the continued customer, you coming back. Once you click, you're in, right? The damage is done. And so that manipulation, even though you can be kind of emotionally persuaded to do it at the moment, it's something that basically you're always going to have that buyer's regret later. Oh, crap, I did that. And I, you know, you hear that so many times. People, like, as soon as they've clicked on a link, they're calling IT and saying, you know, I just did this. What do I do now? And so often it's that immediate response, even if it's a buyer's regret. So if we are looking at identifying manipulation, help us, give us some ideas about how we can start to, you know, identify the trends, the pieces of it, that put it together so that maybe we can not be sucked in by it.
Yeah, you know, and I think exactly as we've been, like, walking through this, like the main thing here is that you know, it's not sustainable. So even if this relates to online, and sometimes we might feel like, you know, hey, you know, I'm kind of like out in the dark, nobody knows who I am. You know, people may buy, they may like, they may have buyer's remorse, I don't really care. You know, like in the past, if someone, like face-to-face, if someone gets upset, they might tell 10 people, which is typically what happens over the course of a bad experience. But especially as it relates to online, now with online reviews and the way that people can talk about your company, and I don't do any online purchases without whatever the item is or the company name and the word review in it. I look for the social proof of what others are saying. Like, was this company good to deal with? Was this company bad to deal with? Was the product good? Was it bad? I look for that social proof in there, and I value what other people are saying. And you know, the last thing that we're going to want is manipulation stuff out there where people feel like they got, you know, scandal in mm-hmm. those situations, that they didn't feel safe in the purchase. Which is why, like in the whole craft, I have a whole chapter in the book called Craft a Call to Action That Users Can't Resist. And in this, I talk about what that call to action looks like, what it should be for them. And part of it is like that whole communication of value so that they fully get it.
Give us your synopsis on that one. That's interesting. Crafting that call to action, because that might, you know, help us identify some things that we're seeing come to us as a call to action.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I'll hit these real quickly for you. I put 13 points in my book, and I walk through examples of these. 13 points of crafting a call to action. First of all, is to make sure that your ask is clear. And this applies to, like, a landing page. It applies to a conversation. I mean, how many times have we received an email from someone, and we get finished reading it, and we're like, I'm not even sure what they're asking from me? Or we've had a phone call with someone, we get off, they're like, well, what's that all about? What's the ask? So making sure that we have clearly defined what our ask is. Making sure, the second thing, make sure there's a very strong verb that's included in that, the action verb there. The third point, that I encourage people to make it personal. By using words like you and your, you pull them into this decision making. You pull them in. They feel like it's for them. It's about them. So making sure that it's very personal. Communicate value. Like, people are looking for their exchange. Even if it's something as simple as giving up their email address for your online work when you're going to be sending them emails, what's the value? If I'm exchanging money, if I'm exchanging personal information, what's the value? Is it worth the exchange of those? So be and make sure that we communicate the value. The fifth one is being clever. Like, there's so much out there. And I'm not talking about being cheesy in this, but to be clever in how we say things, how we represent them. The sixth one that I talked about is emotion, like making sure that there is a sense of emotion. We can get the personal story in there. If we can create an emotion, they're more likely to buy. Creating a sense of urgency, you know, making sure there's some type of countdown on all of this, that there's this end point in place, a sense of urgency, and kind of what you just talked about too. I encourage people to use a singular call to action. Sometimes in our messaging, like, there are four or five things that we need people to decide. But if we put everything out there at once, we can lose them oftentimes because they feel overwhelmed. It's too many decisions to make. It's too complicated. And what I encourage people is to take a linear path, a call to action where you ask, well, what is the one thing they have to decide? Like, of all the decisions that you made, what's number one? What's number two? What's number three? And then walk them down a path of making decisions, not throwing a bunch of decisions in their face at a single time there. I encourage people also to use strong, punchy language. For example, you know, you can say you're invited to something, or you can say reserve your seat now, right? So we've got a strong verb in there. So using strong, punchy language. The tenth thing is to reduce risk. Like, we are, psychologically, we're analyzing the risk factor before we give up our contact information or before we make a purchase. So what can you do? What can we do as people that are persuading, what can we do to reduce the risk for the users, for the people that are purchasing from us? Another thing that I encourage people to do is look at scarcity. Can you create limited supply to create higher demand for that? The social proof, the power of a crowd. And then the last one is easy. If we make our decisions complicated for people and the steps complicated, they're going to abandon. So what do we do to make every single bit of this process as simple, as easy as possible?
That is a great set of steps. I was actually taking notes because I'm like, okay, next time I go to the meeting trying to sell my cyber thing to my company I work for, I need to put these things in there. And oh my God, us engineers, we like details. So this whole single point of action is so foreign that this is where we get ourselves in trouble. You know, we're like, if we say, give somebody two minutes or 30 seconds in the elevator, and they're like, I want to hear more, we're thinking about going out and creating a book of 100 bullet points for them to evaluate, and they want three. You know, they want, you know, the singularity, the next point of action, the strong, they want this list here, and our brains go into, right, they want a data dump. And I'm as guilty as this as any, you know. Go out and put my list together, like, yeah, I'm going to send you 20 emails to show up where, you know, where I got all my points at. And they're looking at it like, oh, we just indated me, you know. But these are the mistakes.
Our users do like it simple. Like, they want to understand the very simplicity of this. The first chapter in working through this is called crafting a simple message. And what I do in it is I help people understand, how do you create a very simple message? And I'm not talking about a paragraph. I'm talking about 1, 2, 3, 4 words. How do you create something so simple that they can understand it, and at the same time whet their appetite for them to ask you for the next grouping of words? What we don't want is to power them with so much conversation that they're like, just stop all this. Instead, we want to excite them, right? So here's an example. When people say, hey, Jeff, what do you do for a living? My response is always this. I say, I speak professionally, and I stop. Now, they're expecting like 30 to 45, 60 seconds out of me, but I don't. I say, I speak professionally, and I pause. And here's what happens almost every single time. 99 times out of 100, they'll say, oh, well, what do you speak about? And I will simply say, I speak on persuasive communications. And I stop. And now they're like really into it at this point, and most times they'll come back and say something like, oh, so you teach people how to manipulate for a living. And I kind of have fun dissecting that. But my point here is, I don't tell them everything. Uh-huh. I tell them just enough to pique their interest so they ask me the next part of that information.
Very interesting approach. I'm taking notes on this too. Anyway, if you could put together a session for engineers to kind of nail these points home on how they can talk to their, you know, their managers, their business decision makers, that would be an amazing presentation that you could probably go around the world talking about. I don't know if you have that already.
Exactly, and the way that the book lays it out, I mean, it's step by step on how you do it, and it works if you're dealing with a group of people. It works if you're dealing with your supervisor. It works if you're creating a landing page, if you're creating a sales page, if you're writing email copy, whatever you happen to be doing. The steps of this easily walk you through it and help you make decisions for yourself as to what's best. Now, I'm very clear in the book that, you know, this is not a linear path. This is not a silver bullet. We're dealing with human beings. We're not dealing with robots. Like, everyone is going to be different. But what we do know generally accepted practices of what will work. So, like, for example, in positioning your message, like, I talk about loss aversion versus prospect theory. And when people start to understand, like, the difference between those two and how you position your ask, it changes the way that people respond to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has definitely been an interesting conversation, and I think it really relates to how things that are needed in the soft skills for especially the engineering and cybersecurity communities. And I really thank you for coming on today. Tell us how people can get a hold of your next book or what you currently do to get a hold of you to come in and speak and whatnot.
Yeah, the easiest way is to just text the word persuade to 66866. That's persuade to 66866. And here's what happens. Instantaneously, you'll get a copy, a free copy of the chapter on craft message. This is a foundation for persuading people. It gives you everything you need to know to craft a message designed to persuade other people. So by texting persuade to that, you'll have that instantaneously, and you'll have my information there as well.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on today. We definitely appreciate this. It's been a great show, Jeff. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.